Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Cullop, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 24th.
It is.
Week 28, we said.
Yes.
How about that?
Oof.
I remember it from 3 days ago. Go me.
That actually is a thing, though, because I'm, like, losing track of all days.
I understand. It's Thursday.
Okay, thanks.
24th.
Thank you.
September.
If nothing else, that's our public service.
I think that is. Every day we do the show to reconfirm the date.
Yes.
So there you are. Welcome, everyone. We're glad that you are with us. It is our community information program about COVID-19, and it, of course, is airing here on KSJE's Facebook and YouTube page, and today, through the miracle of technology, Twitter. We're streaming to Twitter.
I'm so excited about that.
At KSJE. So if
I was
you're a Twitter person,
you
can...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Twitter person.
There you go. So you can watch us there as well and share it from Twitter and Facebook or YouTube or wherever.
The tweets.
So there you are. But lots to talk about today.
Yes.
There's some new numbers out, of course, that we'll be updating everybody on. We have a guest to talk about mindfulness, which is interesting, right?
Yeah.
The whole concept of mindfulness. We're hearing a lot more about that these days.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's been around for quite some time, and I actually was very, like, skeptical of it, but I will say.
Were you?
Yeah. Well,
let's see how you are after my interview.
Yeah.
We'll get you to be a convert, unless you are already.
I am. I give it more credence. I'm not good at it, because as most of us know, I'm more of a restless type.
Okay.
A little frenetic.
Mm, right, so. I can see that.
Yeah, I know. Everybody can see it. It's on tape.
We've met you.
Exactly.
But that's all right.
So I'm sure that, but I'm excited about that interview.
Yeah, it's coming up. So yeah. Stay tuned, as we say, everybody. We want to start out by talking about testing. And, of course, there's a few more testing dates and times coming up this week. Tonight here at San Juan College, again, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday. Tomorrow morning here at San Juan College on September 25th, Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And then there's a testing set on Saturday, September 26th in the morning from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. at the Public Health Office, which is located at 355 South Miller Avenue in Farmington for our radio audience.
Yes.
So there you go. And again, the Department of Health is doing that. It's a free test, and you can call ahead of time, get registered online ahead of time, and they'll set you up and get you in, get you out fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. So there you go.
That's what's going on.
There you are. Let's talk about
What's
going on here. This number, that doesn't look updated, so let me...
I have an updated one.
Let me do that while you talk about...
Yes.
Yeah, update.
So, U.S. confirmed cases... 6,935,799, 201,920.
Got it.
Globally, confirmed cases were almost at 32 million.
Wow.
And global deaths were 977,452.
So we have hit that kind of, everyone has kind of been talking about,
yeah.
The 200,000.
Yeah.
And so I keep pointing out that I know, folks thought we might hit that at Labor Day. We've hit that after Labor Day. So I think that's a positive. We still
right.
hit it. So that's a negative. That's still 201,000, souls.
Almost 202,000. Yeah.
That have been lost.
Yes.
And so we have to kind of think about that and think about what that means for those families and communities. But,
yes.
But as we move forward, we can still kind of see how this is impacting our country and others across the world.
Yes.
So there you are. That's the right graphic. I apologize for having the wrong one.
Yeah.
Up there
well,
earlier.
On the graphic with this red, right? Like the United States is just this massive blob of red.
Well, but so is Europe. I mean, if you're looking for blobs of red.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. So compared to other parts.
But look
at
Canada.
Right, Canada.
I guess I would say.
Although sparsely populated. Same with the northern part of Asia is sparsely populated.
Sure.
Certainly not the southern part. But
right. A little bit of China there, and I see what you're saying. Africa, though, we talked about that, I think, on Monday.
It's amazing how Africa has not been hit as hard. We did talk about that on Monday, and they're trying to figure out why Kenya has been so successful in this.
Sure, but there is certainly a lot of red on that map.
Yes.
So there you are. Next, we have updated numbers from San Juan County that we want to share with you. And, of course, the county, I think, tries to calculate these and put these together every week. These are kind of the averages. So, again, the lines are not quite as up and down, up and down, up and down. They're a little bit more smoothed out, if you will. So this one that we're showing right now is the state of New Mexico in kind of the purple, San Juan County in blue, and Navajo Nation in green. And you can see how the numbers are going here. Again, kudos to the Navajo Nation, who's turned things around quite well.
To the point where Dr. Fauci even directly referenced them.
Yes.
Nationwide.
Yes. Yeah. And so kudos to them. San Juan County numbers are still low, as we'll see in just a moment, too. But the state had a little bit of an upswing there at the maybe end of last week. And so we're kind of watching that. And we'll see kind of a little bit more about that here in just a minute as well. But that's kind of where things are going. We're still trending down, and we'll hope that that little blip there for the state number points back down here next week. So, and then again, the county cases and deaths, you can certainly see from the peak here in San Juan County there back in May, that was the highest, and that was at about 307 cases down to maybe average of 18. Is where we are.
Yeah.
So quite a difference.
And
again, good to go. We dropped again. There was a little bit of a surge back in late June, back up to 181 from 94, but then it's come back down again, which is great. So keep up the good work, everybody, because that seems to be making a difference.
Yes.
So that's important. And the deaths, again, twos and threes and ones, really low. Still not zero, which would be the best outcome.
Of course.
But they're certainly not increasing.
Right.
So we're happy about that as well. So we'd like to share these numbers with you. And thank you to San Juan County for compiling these for us every week. And we share those when we get them. Here are the numbers from the state. Now, yesterday, we had 200 new cases in New Mexico. That's the highest number that I've seen in probably about a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
They were pretty low there for a while. They were under 100 there for a while.
Do we think this is a Labor Day hangover or what?
I don't know. I haven't seen any kind of interpretations of that number. Yeah. So I don't. Well, maybe I have to see if we still get a lot of high numbers now moving forward, or if they drop back down again. So we will see. I know there's an update this afternoon, by the way, from the governor's office. So they'll be updating everyone on maybe some of this, and maybe they'll have some insights into this number. But we'll see. Out of that 200, however, San Juan County still looking good with only 4 new cases. So again, our numbers are still in that single-digit range, which is excellent. If we're still going to get cases, we don't want to see a lot of those. We're now at 3,280 cases in San Juan County. Deaths in New Mexico were 3 more yesterday for a total of 857. None of those were in San Juan County. And again, we had 83 new recoveries for a total of 15,669.
Yeah.
So that's where we are these days. But yeah, that 200 was kind of a surprise, at least to me. Navajo Nation, again, they had 27 new cases yesterday, total of 10,167 now. 3 additional deaths on Wednesday as well for a total of now 551 on the reservation.
Gotcha.
So that's where we are.
Yes.
So there you are with that numbers. I think we're up to date.
We are.
With what we wanted to share.
Good.
So that's good. Now let's talk mindfulness.
Yeah, let's do it.
Right? Let me find our interview. But again, I say our, but you weren't here.
On assignment.
You were
out at the res, actually.
You were on the reservation. That's true. And you couldn't join us by Zoom, but that's okay. But I think I did a good job. You
not
can
as
tell
good
me.
Of internet connection out there.
Right. So let's listen to Emily Epstein from San Juan Health Partners Behavioral Health talking with me about mindfulness. Joining me now to talk a little bit about mindfulness and some other things that she does with her patients, Emily Epstein is here. She is a nurse practitioner with San Juan Health Partners Behavioral Health. She's speaking with me on the phone this morning. And Emily Epstein, good morning. Thank you for being with us today.
Good morning, Scott. Great to be with you.
You bet. Appreciate that. And so as I mentioned, we appreciate you calling in to talk about this idea of mindfulness and what this is all about and help us to understand maybe how we can adapt some of these things during these stressful times with COVID-19 and all the things that are going on in this crazy year. So talk to me a little bit about mindfulness.
Yeah. So, you know, just to kind of summarize, mindfulness can really help us build resilience, you know, in non-stressful times, but especially during stressful times. It enables us to kind of expand our comfort zone with difficult experiences we may be having. It helps us sort of move into a space where we can respond intentionally to what's going on rather than in patterns of reactivity. You know, it can help us decrease our stress level, can actually help us facilitate, you know, our improve our physical health. Yeah.
Okay. So much to unpack there, too, I think, to talk about how that can help us. Because as you were kind of listing some of those things, I was like, yep, got that. Yep, done that. So let's talk a little bit about that. So how can we get into that that behavior, I guess? How can that help us in everyday life? What should we be thinking about as we encounter these frustrating, stressful situations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's helpful to know that, you know, though many of us think that mindfulness is just a form of meditation, it's also a way of paying attention more generally. It's a way of paying attention that is focused in the present moment, focused on our sensory experience, which in Buddhist philosophy includes our thoughts. And very importantly, it's with an attitude of acceptance. So, it can also be thought of as, you know, directing our attention in a way that is observing what's going on in our experience rather than engaging with it.
I got it. I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, it seems like maybe some people, maybe, you know, we get into a set routine and we're kind of just going through the motions. We get up and we go to work and we come home and that's what we do. And we're not really living in the moment. Am I close to what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And, you know, we carry around these sort of unconscious patterns of thought that aren't always based on reality, don't leave us feeling the way that we want to feel, don't allow us the space to act in intentional ways. You know, we have these patterns of reactivity, and during stressful times, such as, you know, so much of what 2020 is
a global pandemic. Yeah, right.
Yes, right. Those patterns of reactivity can be supercharged, especially when we don't really stop to sort of reflect on them. So mindfulness can happen through, as I mentioned, a formal practice where we're sitting, you know, for several minutes at a time. It can happen when we're doing mindful activities. So any activity that we're doing that we can apply mindful attention to, be it, you know, daily chores, going on walks. But I think, as I had mentioned, it can happen on a momentary basis. And so any time that we notice that our mind has wandered, and we can bring our attention back to our sensory experience, and we often do this with an anchor. It can be our breath. It can be any sort of bodily sensation, or it can be hearing. Anytime we notice our mind's wandered, we bring the attention back to the anchor. That's sort of the magic moment of mindfulness. And the more we can do that, the more we can sort of build that mindfulness muscle and kind of, you know, rewire our brains in a mindful way.
Right, right. Well, that sounds like great advice. And can this work for adults, of course, but how about for children? Can they also become more in tune with mindfulness?
Absolutely. You know, mindfulness is being introduced in schools all over the country, all over the world. You know, kids are able to understand this concept, and you know, it's a habit. We can build habits, and kids are able to do so as well. I think that an important thing that's worth mentioning is that within mindfulness, we can shift this sort of orientation towards the sort of us versus them, towards an orientation of sort of oneness with all people and with the world, in a way that helps us engage, which is so important now during a time that's so polarized, you know, when all of us are really kind of in the same boat.
Right. Interesting. And so, so talk to me a little bit about some of the folks that you were seeing. I know we can't talk about specific patients and cases necessarily, but when folks come to you for help, what are they coming to you with? What are their big issues? Is it just stress of everyday life, or is it, or what are you seeing the most of these days, I guess, is my short question.
Well, so I treat a wide range of people with different, you know, psychiatric challenges, but mm-hmm. what I'm seeing, it's a common thread recently, is that a lot of things that, you know, have sort of been happening under the surface are getting activated during such a stressful time.
Things like what?
What'd you say? So stress
right.
can bring out not just, you know, psychiatric things, but also physical things. You know, when we're stressed out and we're in fight or flight mode, then we're often releasing stress hormones such as cortisol, which can be associated with, you know, physical morbidity and mortality, as well as, you know, psychiatric problems. When we meditate, we are able to expand our comfort zone with difficult sensations.
Right.
In Western society, we're primed to sort of feel like if we have a problem that we need to fix it, be it through medication or be it through surgery or whatnot. But, you know, in Buddhist philosophy and when we meditate, we learn that when we cling to something, and this is not just clinging, you know, to something that we want, but when we're actively trying to push away something that is troublesome or uncomfortable to us, we haven't actually arrived at what that thing is. And mindfulness allows us to have this sort of space, this sort of container of acceptance, where we're able to sort of experience what we're experiencing rather than push it away. And thereby, we can act in intentional ways to help us feel more comfortable with them, but also, you know, engage with the community, do, you know, act in goal-oriented and value-oriented ways.
I see. Okay, and I appreciate that explanation. Thank you. And it sounds like maybe that we cling to some of this stuff that's negative, that's probably not healthy for us to cling to, but we maybe don't know how to uncling from it. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
And if we,
it's a practice for that reason. You know, we're not going to get it right, but when we reorient our attention in this way, then we are kind of rewiring our brain.
Interesting. And so when we talk about these things or maybe deal with these things that are maybe negative, and we know for ourselves that maybe should let them go or get over it or move on because it's a negative thing that's affecting my outlook, my life, my whatever. Mm-hmm. These are some of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah. And like I had said, I think that the instinct is to kind of push them away. But when we approach them with mindfulness, we get to notice these sort of constellations of, you know, this thought that we have and this emotion that's maybe associated with it and how it feels in our body, which kind of opens a space for comfort and intentionality.
And Emily Epstein, are there any signs that we could watch for in ourselves or in others that maybe would be something, kind of a telling sign that it's time to maybe stop and reassess and maybe consider some of these mindfulness techniques and things that you're talking about with me this morning?
I think that when we start to notice these patterns of reactivity, that when we notice that something happens and then we're acting based on them with, you know, without sort of thinking about what's happening. We may notice that we're getting really sort of emotional, irritable, that we may be kind of entering survival mode. You know, some people may want to kind of turn inward. You know, that's maybe a sign that it might be time to seek, you know, any sort of mental health treatment, counseling. You know, mindfulness practice is certainly a good way to do that. And, you know, at the end of our conversation, I'm happy to share some resources to that end as well.
Yes, definitely. I think that'd be very helpful for our listeners and viewers this morning. And so as we go through this, and of course, we're talking about the pandemic and COVID-19 and folks are concerned and maybe they know someone who has become infected or, God forbid, yeah. someone who has passed away, and they're hearing about it all the time in the news, and it's just a constant stream of information about this very important topic, but I can understand where some people may just want to say enough. I really get it, but I don't need to hear about it every minute of every day.
Right. Right. And I think that there's a, like in Buddhist philosophy, they call it a skillfulness. So sort of skillful attention, which kind of applied to this situation, I would say, would look like kind of regulating your intake of media. You know, it wouldn't be the same thing as turning away completely, but just noticing how, you know, engaging in media makes you feel, what that experience is like for you, and maybe using that to sort of inform, you know, to resource yourself. So, you know, maybe I'll turn the TV off, or, you know, I'll go do something that, you know, puts me in direct engagement with my sensory experience, right? Walking or gardening or, you know, things like that.
Sure. Right. I understand. And thank you for not saying turn off the radio. I appreciate that very much. But I can understand where folks may need to take a break, and I completely get that. But if I want to be a well-informed citizen and ingest all this news and all this information, but still don't want to go, you know, get deeply negatively affected by it, is there any techniques or any advice you have to be able to deal with all this negative press or negative news stories about everything, but still be somewhat positive in my outlook, or at least try to digest it and move on to something else?
I think that we need to have an outlet. We need to be able to resource ourselves, you know. We need to be able to kind of process everything that's going on. And I think it's important to know that, you know, when there's so much information coming our way, and often seemingly, you know, contradictory information, it can be good to just kind of notice, you know, information is information, and it may not always be... We need to have a good, unbiased sort of source of information, I think, and we need to pay attention to how we feel when we engage in it, I would say.
I would agree with you. I talk about sources all the time, and it really matters where you're getting your information.
Yeah.
And most of the times it probably shouldn't be a Facebook news feed, but that's just my opinion.
Right.
But you mentioned something else earlier that I want to pick up on in the few remaining minutes that we have together this morning, and that was kind of that us versus them mindset, and that certainly sounds a lot like the political spectrum these days, and we have an election coming up, so I know folks are going to be hearing a lot more us versus them, or the other party, or
right.
the other guy, or lady, or whatever the case may be. So
right.
I guess I'm asking for some more advice from you, if you don't mind, about how we can try to digest some of those messages, because obviously some of our elected representatives in Santa Fe or Washington are not clear on the concept of not doing us versus them, it seems to me.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the time, I would say we're acting from a space of either love or a space of fear. And when we do this us versus them thing, then we're usually acting from a space of fear. And to just kind of bring this back to mindfulness, you know, I had mentioned that when we meditate, we kind of open the space for intentional and sort of values and goals driven thought and action. We can actually build a muscle of compassion when we meditate. There are ways to do this formally through a meditation practice, and there are also ways that this kind of just grows naturally when we do have this practice. And through building that sort of sense of love and compassion, we actually feel more connected with the people around us. Because I would say that, you know, this feeling like it's me versus them is not based on reality. You know, we're all humans. We're all, you know, all humans suffer. We're all in this together.
Very true. Well, that's something good to keep in mind as we move forward. And I appreciate your time very much this morning, Emily Epstein. You mentioned maybe sharing ways that folks can get in touch with you or your office if they are thinking that it may be time to pay you a visit or maybe get some of this advice for themselves. Well, how can we do that?
Yeah, so San Juan Health Partners Behavioral Health Clinic, we are open to the public. We're at 555 South Schwartz Avenue, and you can reach us by phone at 505-609-3521.
Okay. And do folks need a referral to come and see you, or can they just make a call on their own and see where things stand?
We are certainly taking people who are self-referred. So people, yeah. So I would just say feel free to give a call if you need to reach out. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. Well, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Emily Epstein, thank you for joining me this morning and teaching me a little bit more about mindfulness, but it's certainly worth consideration, especially in these very different times we're living in. So I appreciate the information very much this morning.
Yes, absolutely. And I wanted to make a shameless plug for my favorite mindfulness resource, which is 10%
yes.
Happier. You can find it on the web, 10% Happier spelled out. There is a podcast. It's hosted by Dan Harris, who was a reporter for ABC, and he had wound up having sort of a panic attack on the air, and it kind of caused him to sort of reflect on his life, and he found mindfulness and has been has created all these resources, has worked with these mindfulness teachers, and I think it's really oriented toward the general public in a very digestible way. So you can find, there's podcasts wherever you do get your podcasts. There's an app that you can get for a smartphone. There's a website. There's also a book. So I would highly recommend that for anybody who's interested in digging a little bit deeper with mindfulness.
All right. We'll add that link to our interview here once we post it on Facebook so folks can find it that way too. So thank you again for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Scott.
All right. You're very welcome. That is Emily Epstein. She is with San Juan Health Partners Behavioral Health, my guest here on KSJE. And we're back here in the studio to talk a little bit about that interview and just an update. The phone number to reach Emily Epstein at San Juan Health Partners Behavioral Health is 505-609-6680. So that's the correct phone number that we want to share with folks, but there you go. I learned a little bit about mindfulness.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Do I need more mindfulness, do you think, in my life?
I think
we all do, probably.
No, yeah. I'm sure everybody does. Yeah. I mean, we definitely live in a hyper-busy, usually overcommitted environment. So I think slowing down sometimes, it would benefit all people. So
I think that's true.
Yeah.
And you're right. And I think a lot of folks maybe are enjoying more of their personal time, their family time, because they're slowing down, because they're spending more time at home and maybe trying to be even maybe inadvertently more mindful of those special times with people that they care about.
I think so. I mean, I think we've broken a lot of our habits, both things that we enjoy, unfortunately, that are temporarily on hold for who knows how long during COVID normal, which is my phrasing,
okay,
instead of the new normal, because you know how I despise that term. So COVID
with a passion.
With a passion.
Despise it.
The vehement passion.
Yes.
But you know, and so as we trade those off, it's actually a unique time to perhaps gain some new habits. So
I think that's true. And good healthy habits would be
even better.
Right?
Yeah.
There you go.
As opposed to day drinking, maybe a healthier habit
right.
would be great. Yeah.
That's true.
Exactly.
So there you go. Anyway, we appreciate Emily Epstein joining us, and always great to get local professionals on the show to share with what they know.
That's what we
do. So that's what we do. True. You had a couple of stories to share with us, too, before we go today.
What's up? The research beat.
Yes.
So we'll start with
because as we send you off on assignment, it's not that you're just sitting around eating bonbons. You are actually doing research.
On assignment, yes.
Yeah.
So, two things. So I'll start with a more serious story, and then we'll end it on this
other one.
This nifty note. Yeah.
You had me at nifty.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Radio
Thank
listeners
you.
Cannot
1950s,
see
Megan.
That. It's the bee's knees.
That's right.
So The first one comes from, actually, last night there was a report coming out of Bloomberg News, and it's the Daily Prognosis is the name of this. It's a podcast they do, and it's nice. It's okay. It's easily consumed because it's about 15 minutes. And they were talking about how we now have 12 confirmed cases of people getting reinfected with the virus. Maybe. Now, yes. Now, out of over, what was
what
it?
What did
like,
we say?
Like, it was like over 6 million cases or something.
Right.
In just America, 12 million worldwide is kind of, you know, small change, but not really, because this is something, of course, as we learn new things about the virus, we're trying to figure out, because kind of some of these other infectious diseases, like measles, for example, you get that once in your life and you're good to go. You won't
right.
be contracting measles again. But stuff like flu strands and stuff that kind of evolve over time, we know that you can get the flu last year, you can get the flu this year. And so the question is, when it comes to this herd immunity idea, is how many people really are going to have enough antibodies after being infected to sustain immunity? Or not. And it's really quite the mystery. And, you know, they had one case where the person had a severe case of COVID, they recovered, and then they got reinfected, but it was a milder case. But they also had the flip side, which was a milder case, and then the second time they contracted it, a more severe case. So it's something that obviously is pretty significant when we're talking about the hunt for immunity, be it through vaccine or through exposure.
Right.
Now, again, 12 confirmed cases, which have come out of China and Hong Kong primarily, but we also know that they were the first to be hit with the wave.
True.
I
can tell you're seeing, we have a comment from the Bonbon Lobby on our Facebook page that there's nothing wrong with eating bonbons while you're on assignment.
I was going to say.
So there you go.
Yes. Thank you for interrupting that serious news with bonbons. I appreciate the caveat, as always. And
yes.
we all know that I have zero qualms with engaging in
right.
stuff like bonbons.
Okay,
but,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Wow. Okay, so back where we're at. So anyway,
yes.
so
these reinfections,
mm-hmm.
very concerning.
And, right, and the big consideration, because again, we think, well, 12, that's slim pickings compared to the massive amounts of deaths
millions
and
of cases
people
and
that
deaths.
Have been confirmed cases. But it's really a question of, well, are we even looking, right? It's one thing to see these cases pop up, and it's another thing to say, like, have we been looking for that? Have we been tracking that? Certainly, of course, we have not been tracking it to the same extent we've been tracking infections, because we're just now in a stage of the virus where reinfection is even maybe possible. And so I think there's going to be, you know, what this report was implying was, you know, there's going to be some more concerted efforts out there to check up on this question of immunity.
Right. Interesting. And I would guess that would maybe complicate efforts for the vaccine too, right? If you can make a vaccine and then, you know, but then someone can get reinfected if you have the mm-hmm. vaccine. Is that, I mean, I'm not a doctor, obviously.
Right.
Right.
Nor am I.
Right.
But, you know,
but
it's,
anyway,
yeah, but so. It's definitely, it's definitely a concern. We've also, you know, there's a lot of different technologies. When it comes to vaccines, there's a lot of different ways that they work, or there's at least a handful of different ways that we can try, you know, come up with vaccines. So, and speaking of vaccines, we do have another vaccine update. Johnson & Johnson is now, you know, is one of the companies in the running. But what is significant and unique about Johnson & Johnson is they're testing a vaccine that is a one and done. So some of these vaccines have series. A big one is the varicella vaccine, which is for chickenpox, is a series of three. And so if you don't get the series of three, you're not going to have the benefit of it, right? And so come up with a one and done vaccine is really significant. Not just that, like, nobody likes to get shots, so getting one is preferable, but also the likelihood of people returning to complete the whole series of shots, you know, it's a lesser likelihood, right?
Right.
Of getting the full benefit. So that's important. So mm-hmm. that's a very, I thought that was a pretty awesomely substantial piece of news there. The fun story.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jeez.
I knew we were getting there, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, it's about dogs. So,
right. Okay. And
bonbons. Dogs.
No. Finnish dogs.
Uh huh. Dogs can't have bonbons because it's a chocolate thing, right?
It's bad for them.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
more for you.
More for me, less for the hound. In Finland, as well as other places, Germany, the United States has taken this up, Korea has taken this up, testing, there's a lot of canines who are adept at sniffing out diabetes and even some cancers. And so they're taking these canines that have already been trained to sniff out those diseases to possibly sniff out coronavirus. And they're actually testing it in Finnish airports at this point. What that looks like is you don't even have to come near a dog. They wipe you down. They do like a swab. They throw that in a container. They take it back to the dog, and the dog sniffs it. And then they've trained it to be like, lie down if this is positive, or bark if this is positive, or whatever.
Right, okay.
And
all right.
I don't think it was as simple as like, hey, can you bark if this is positive? I think it probably, but these dogs are already trained to sniff out these diseases. So they're trying it with coronavirus. And it's pretty fascinating and compelling because they've had luck where the dog sniffs something out. Then they do a swab, and it's a rapid swab. And so they can get test results within a few minutes.
Right. Confirming what the dog sniffed. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I know. So you're talking about a very cheap way to test and a very efficient way if you had enough.
Right. Dog. I would say efficient. I don't know about cheap. I don't know how much it costs to train a dog to do that.
Well,
but they're already trained in other things. So.
Well, the report was saying it's cheaper.
Gotcha.
So it's more cost efficient. But then again, at this juncture, you still have to follow up with a swab test, so
yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, so Finland is testing that on airports, and of course if that's successful, they'll move it to testing out at cultural events, schools, other congregant settings.
Right, well, we want to do that, so that's interesting.
So yeah, dogs.
Okay, cool.
What, coronavirus canines, so cool, great info.
There you see.
That came in on the Facebooks.
That did. Thank you, Facebook.
Yeah.
So there you are. Thank you for doing the research.
You're welcome.
While you're on assignment.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, there you go. Well, it's been a great show. Lots of good information.
Yeah. Well, I should note that second piece of research about the coronavirus canines was from the personal algorithm, which we haven't heard from in a while.
Okay.
My secret source.
Your secret source.
It's an anonymous source that sometimes passes information along to me. So I wanted to make sure we got that shout out in.
Okay. But I believe that's been reported in the media.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a source
it's
that
not like that's a big secret.
So yeah, I mean, I did the research on the vaccines and the immunity thing, and then they do their side research and sometimes slip it to me. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
An unpaid staff member.
I hope they're wearing gloves. That's all I can say.
When they slip?
Yes. That's what I said. Okay. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. This is, again, our community information program about COVID-19. We'll be back on Monday. We're planning to talk a bit about recreational opportunities that are being opening back up. Again, the latest health orders and things like that. There certainly is another update from the governor this afternoon, so we encourage you to check that out, and we will certainly pass along all the other information as well. So we appreciate you watching and being with us today, and until Monday. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, everybody. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.